You're listening to Artbeat on RTR FM for this Friday, July 19th. It's 10:15. Now, have you seen the front cover of August's Rolling Stone magazine? You might be forgiven for thinking that boy on the front is perhaps someone from the Strokes or an affiliated clone band. It could be a young Jim Morrison, perhaps. But it's actually Boston bomber Zyoka Zanev. And inside the magazine is a two-month investigative report that tracks the 19-year-old's tragic, dangerous path from a well-liked student to a man accused of mass murder, focusing in on the increasing influence of radical Islam in his life. On the cover, it's a picture of a hipster from a cool new band, but should it be there, and has Rolling Stone gone too far too soon? The cover has caused outrage, with some appalled that such a person could be given the rock star treatment, and others defending the cover in light of the article's content. We're going to be discussing some of these issues in the next hour or next 45 minutes between now and 11. And we start with Curtin University's School of Media, Culture and Creative Arts lecturer Dr. Tama Lever, who was with us on the line to discuss whether the picture makes a martyr or a monster out of the alleged Boston bomber. Tama, thank you very much for joining us on Artbeat.
My pleasure.
So could we maybe start with perhaps your interpretation of this controversy?
I personally think the cover's really clever. I think it very accurately situates Zyoka as the centre of a media machine. And I think it reminds us that everything about terrorism, everything about the Boston bombings, and indeed a lot about Zyoka's life from reading the piece, has been deeply influenced by the broader culture in which he is situated, and the fact that he is not a unique individual doing something that goes against the grain. He is responding to a cultural context, and a cultural context where the media at large is obsessed with the idea of terrorism and extremes. And I think situating him in a way that provokes us to think, well, how exactly does he sit in that sort of sea of conflicting meanings is a really important thing to do. And I think Rolling Stone, in my opinion, have done a really good job at provoking that question. I mean, the fact that we're having that conversation on the other side of the world is indicative of the fact that they've, if nothing else, started a really important conversation.
And that's a very good point too, because a lot of the mainstream debate about this is whether it's you know, giving the rock star treatment to a man accused of mass murder, or whether it's a cynical push just to sell a few more units of the magazine. But, you know, it's quite clever in the sense that it is getting to the point that the article within the magazine is actually making, that this is a kid who is just a normal, everyday-looking kid, but through certain events and through certain circumstances led to this these events happening. And that's kind of the point of the article and kind of the point of the picture, I think.
Absolutely. I think it's a very confronting thing for people to look at this and go, oh, this is telling us that this kid is in part at least a product of his culture. He's a product of what is happening in the world, what is happening in America, how America relates to the rest of the world. Now, I'm not saying that excuses his actions, and that's not, I don't think anyone's saying that, but to prevent the next Zyoka or to prevent the next extreme act, we have to understand the circumstances which give rise to people who come from a relatively decent, relatively well-off background for making these extreme choices. And I think that that's what is on the table here. And I think the sort of the knee-jerk reaction of where turning him into some sort of hero is exactly the wrong question. It asks us to think about, well, how, not just how do we construct him, how do we understand him, but how does he get situated in a process, and can we actually unpack that far enough? Can we understand that enough to help people not have a similar experience?
And with this debate and this controversy, Rolling Stone certainly seems to be a victim of their own reputation, in as much as if, you know, they're not the first media outlet to show a picture of the guy. And, you know, if this was a front cover of Time magazine with the same byline, there wouldn't be this controversy, would there?
No, I mean, I think that there is a long tradition of Rolling Stone covers evoking culturally influential figures. I mean, that it's been compared with the Morrison cover quite a lot, and it is shot in a very similar way. Clearly, they have deliberately made him out to look like. You know, he looks like a teen heartthrob. I mean, that's your, if you don't know the context that you're coming from, you're like, oh, yeah. As you said in the intro, it's probably the lead for a new boy band or something. And that says something. This isn't somebody you can immediately distance yourself from. It's not somebody wearing, robes, or somebody wearing a headdress or something like that you can go, oh, that's so clearly the other. This kid doesn't look like the other. He looks like a kid next door. And I think that's a really important thing. I think it should provoke us as a culture or a global culture to think through how do we prevent people being in situations where they feel the need to take these actions.
It is kind of difficult where someone like the Rolling Stone is trying to encourage thoughts and encourage thinking, and then just these very superficial reactions come to the cover. They had a similar thing in 1970 where they had an interview with Charles Manson, and Charles Manson on the cover. The interview was award-winning, but then just the image itself is treated as almost the totality of what the magazine represents.
I do think it would be really tragic if people just end up talking about the cover, because the article itself is incredibly well put together. It tries really hard to balance what he is accused of doing with the circumstances that might lead to it. And I think that's what matters at the moment.
And we've got, Walgreens and CVS and a couple of other outlets in the US are refusing to stock the magazine because of the front cover. Is there I don't want to get on a slippery slope kind of argument here, but is there a bit of a danger that these sort of reactions can lead to a degree of self-censorship within certain aspects of the media where they go, well, look, we should run this cover, but we're worried it might not get stocked. We won't run this because there might be a financial or a moral backlash. And so, the industry can start to self-censor itself in that way?
I think in some contexts that's probably possible. I don't think this will hurt Rolling Stone. I think Rolling Stone has a long history of engaging with controversial subjects, and this will probably do more to shore up the Rolling Stone brand, as it were, than it'll do it harm. I do understand, for example, in Boston, some of the Boston newspapers and seeing that people are outraged. And if this was close to home, you would probably have a very different reaction. It's a very hard thing to know what it would feel like when you imagine people possibly being blown up in that marathon. And I get that, but I think the knee-jerk sort of conservative moral line of, oh, we will, vote with our wallets to show how morally outrageous this is, I don't think that helps anybody, and I don't think it gets to the root of the problem, and I think that is cowardly. I think it's sticking your head in the sand and doesn't help at all.
Well, it's got a little bit of that. When Monty Python's Life of Brian came out and cinemas and councils in the UK were banning it without having seen it, they just sort of heard that it was blasphemous. And it's getting a little bit of this as well. A lot of these reactions condemning Rolling Stone are coming from people that probably haven't read the article and actually seen what the magazine is doing and what it's about and what it's contributing to the discourse.
Absolutely. I just think that is the destructive end of self-censorship or censorship. And I know it's not censorship in the sense of government banning, but when you remove it from circulation for whatever reason, I think that's a dangerous thing. And to be honest, I would really hope that this opens up discussion rather than having the inverse effect.
Oh, you and me both. Dr. Tama Leva from Curtin University School of Media, Culture and Creative Arts, thank you very much for joining us here on Artbeat. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure as well. Thank you.